Welcome back to the Florida History Podcast. I'm Carter Krishnire.
And I'm Robert Bucciolato.
1971, Walt Disney World opens. I'm going to actually post on the Florida Squeeze website, Robert, some stuff from opening day, including Eastern Airlines. I'm a aficionado of Eastern Airlines, as I think many of our listeners know. They were the official airline of Walt Disney World on its opening, and they had an unbelievable spread in their timetable, their fall 1971 timetable. And also, it said something like, Eastern serves 100 and something destinations in 12 countries and one Magic Kingdom. And that was just a great line. But 1971, Walt's vision, sort of, but at least part of the Florida project opens. And it's not just the Magic Kingdom. Let's also mention the Polynesian and the Contemporary Hotels open as well in the fall of 1971.
So if you have read anything about Disneyland, the main thing that you will take away from it was not just how beautiful and retro it looks, but also how absolutely insufferably bad the opening day was. I mean, it was absolutely abysmal. I mean, you're talking about record level temperatures, cement that still hadn't hardened, women stepping in and getting stuck. Bathrooms weren't working. There wasn't enough garbage cans. So people were just throwing stuff. You know, we're so used to in this wonderful, fancy, futuristic world that we live in, where we buy a ticket, and we get into the gates, and then everything, every ride, we get to go on it, and that's that. You know, we don't have to sit and get in a queue and buy tickets like at a carnival. You know, we just got that little armband. We zip in, and then, you know, we're waiting for 95 minutes to, you know, ride, Peter Pan for, you know, a minute and a half and then get off. That's the world we live in right now. The world of 1955 was you pay a very small entrance admission fee, and then you go in, and then there was a series of different tickets. So if you wanted to, say you wanted to go on the teacups, say you wanted to go on some of the other e-attractions that were open at the time, you had to buy actual tickets. So that seems kind of crappy, obviously, because, you know, you just bought a ticket to get in, now you gotta buy more tickets to ride stuff and do stuff. But what was more frustrating was that system was absolutely ripe for people to have counterfeit tickets, because there was no centralized way of keeping track of the tickets. Nothing was electronic. So you had this horrible system where every single major news network was filming live, recording Walt Disney and, you know, some of the old MGM performers that were now long out of work, that were all, you know, radio disc jockeys and stuff like that, and Ronald Reagan and, you know, Dick Nixon and Pat Nixon there, and, you know, big to do. And you had all these people using counterfeit tickets. It's sweltering heat. Nobody can find a bathroom. Nobody can get a garbage can. It was bedlam. And for the remainder of Walt's life, he took great pride in the fact that he would quietly observe what changes needed to be done to the studio, to the park, so that by the time of his death, they had worked out all of the different points. So it was the absolute mission of the entire park staff that when Magic Kingdom opened, it was going to be the total 180 of what it was at Disneyland.
It's a Small World is there, which is a carryover from the World's Fair. There is a Circle Vision 360, but Tomorrowland, doesn't have much. Frontierland doesn't have much. Pirates of the Caribbean is something that they didn't think would work at the Magic Kingdom, or they didn't think would work in Florida, basically. So that doesn't come for a few more years. In fact, I think the original vision for Pirates of the Caribbean, or the pirate ride at Orlando at Walt Disney World was something more New Orleans themed, right? Because they felt like people from Florida wouldn't want to see something Pirates of the Caribbean when so much of Florida's history, as you and I talk about, and you're actually working on a book about this, so much of Florida's history is tied in to piracy and piracy in the Caribbean. That was a ride they ended up bringing to the Magic Kingdom eventually. And Country Bear Jamboree was open. That was a good one. That was a big one. Hall of Presidents, obviously. We talked about that last week. That's World's Fair also inspired. That comes over. Carousel of Progress is big from the beginning. But a lot of the rides and attractions we think of as key attractions in the Magic Kingdom are not there on opening day. I think Peter Pan's flight was probably there, and I believe the Tiki Room was there. But there's a lot. It was pretty empty, believe it or not.
And as a matter of fact, one of the places that got the most complaints, and I don't know why Disney keeps doing this to themselves, was in fact the Future World. A lot of that area.
Yeah, Tomorrowland. Yeah, we're going to talk about Epcot in the next episode, by the way. So Future World, hold that thought, Robert, for next week.
Tomorrowland had a lot of different rides that they deemed would be popular additions to bring in 72, 73, 74, you know, around the time that the park attendance was starting to slip a little bit, and basically just have it so that, you know, each year there was a major new e-attraction that was being released that the public would just, you know, oh God, well, I gotta go, I gotta ride this ride. So, very, very bare bones at the time. I mean, it was basically Carousel of Progress, and that was about it. And if you go to the Hall of Presidents today, you're very, I think you're probably used to the idea of having the ordinary, you know, just boilerplate speech made by the current president, and it's recorded by that president and all that. That was actually something that was brought in later on when the park first opened. It was very much just a quick little, inserted speech by, the same actor who did the Lincoln exhibit over at Disneyland. They had all of the animatronics of every president from Washington to Richard Nixon. Nixon didn't speak. Some of the animatronics, were not really animatronics. they were just kind of stationary figures. So they opened everything. They opened it a little bit rushed. Without question, it was bigger. It was more ambitious than Disneyland. But at the same time, it was not really the Disney World that you know of today. It was still kind of working things out. It would really not be until probably 74, 75 that you would begin to see the kind of Disney World that would exist up until 1994.
Yeah, the mid-90s we'll get into in a future episode, the period between 92, 93, and like 97, really the transition of the parks, both Epcot and the Magic Kingdom, or the parks, the earlier parks, obviously. Let's talk a little bit about the criticisms within Central Florida. There are people, and there are still people, there are people listening to this podcast, there are people who read the Florida Squeeze site, who have a very bad opinion, a very negative opinion of Disney and Disney's impact on Central Florida. So less than a year into Disney coming in, or the park opening, right? Because Disney bought up the land. We talked about all of that before. But less than a year after the Magic Kingdom and the Contemporary, the Polynesian, and the Seven Seas Lagoon, I should mention also, was an opening day. Because obviously that was between the hotels and the Magic Kingdom. there was a real fear among locals that the character of Orlando, the character of Central Florida was being ruined. So keep in mind, while we characterize Orlando as a citrus growing town, and it was, and it was the center of the citrus industry and became sort of a business center for Central Florida, a market town, if you will, if that's the term you want to use, because of the citrus industry, you also have to understand that from the late 1950s onward, with the boom in the space program down the road at Cape Canaveral and in Cocoa Beach and Titusville, something we've talked about a lot on this podcast, something we've talked about a lot on the Florida Squeeze website, Orlando's character already begins to change. You have the Beeline Expressway, now called the Beach Line, that was built by the state by the in the late 1960s, opened in the early 1970s. Why? Not because they're trying to shuttle tourists to Disney World, but because they are trying to get rocket parts and other military equipment over from McCoy Air Force Base, from the Martin Marietta plant on Sand Lake Road, and from other defense-related industries in Orlando to the Cape. That becomes part of Orlando's economy, a big part of Orlando's economy. Now, in early or mid-1972, actually, it was Mike Wallace, 60 Minutes, makes a trip to Central Florida. And what does he find in Central Florida? He finds some local elected officials that are not happy with Disney's presence. He finds local residents upset about water being drained off and diverted to this new park, to the Seven Seas Lagoon, to all the attractions at the Magic Kingdom, to the Contemporary Resort, to the Polynesian Resort, to all the construction going on at Disney. He finds residents, particularly in Osceola County, which was Osceola County had 25,000 people in 1970. It was a small place. It was a very rural kind of farming community. Nothing like today. He finds residents in Kissimmee and St. Cloud very unhappy about the amount of traffic that's on the roads suddenly. And on and on and on. And in fact, US 192 was until the early 2000s, a two-lane road when you got west of Melbourne all the way to St. Cloud. So there's all sorts of traffic. There are all sorts of complications. And contrary to what we find today, maybe in Central Florida, at the time, not everyone was convinced Disney was a good neighbor, and not everyone locally was convinced it was a good deal for Central Florida.
And around this same time, which, first of all, if Mike Wallace is coming to town, it's not going to be a fluff piece.
Right.
But, you know, at this same time, it was a really daunting process because the state government was absolutely on board with what was taking place. You know, legislators were getting, you know, they were getting free accommodation, free passes to go to Disney. You know, it was part of the whole package of being elected in Florida.
Yeah, you know, what's really interesting is that Disney didn't seem to have the local governments in Orange and Osceola County on board with them as much as they had the state on board. That's a paradox as we talk about 2024 when we're recording this one. It's the opposite, right? But again, we're not going to, we said this at the beginning of the series, we're not going to get too into the modern politics, but that was a paradox because some of the people complaining were local elected officials in Kissimmee and in Orlando.
And just to kind of give you guys an idea, the entire Disney World Resort area, and I'm not talking about Magic Kingdom, I'm talking about all the parks, all the land, everything, is almost 30,000 acres. So that is, I want to say that's like two Manhattans. It's a huge piece of land. And so by this time, by the 1970s, by the 1980s, Disney is doing, but in particularly the 70s, Disney is doing so much to revitalize that part of the state. So the state kind of let Disney get away with whatever it wanted to the chagrin of local authorities. You know, it'd be a situation where, you know, local authorities would be like, Disney, what are you doing? And then be like, oh, well, we're building a Walt Disney Airport right here. It's a private strip that you don't have any jurisdiction over. We're building it because we want to build it, and you know, we'll get it taken care of with you know, the FAA later on. And the state looked at it and was like, well, you know, I mean, a little airstrip never bothered anybody. Now I'm going to go to the Contemporary with my family for a little bit. So, you know, I mean, so it was not really a friendly environment.
This is kind of funny because this is coming just years after Claude Kirk, Reuben exactly. Askew, President Nixon, all of them converged on South Florida to say you can't build the Everglades jetport. Remember that?
Yeah.
The great Nathaniel Reed, who was an important Republican influencer, who is also pro-environment. That's why all these things in the Everglades are named after Nat Reed, who just passed away a few years ago. Passed away after we started recording this podcast, by the way. They had just killed an airport, a similar kind of private airport, and made a big cause of it, bipartisan cause. And then when it comes to Disney, it's like, hey, go ahead.
What are you going to do? I mean, yeah, it's right, Disney. Right. They're doing so much. You know, that was... And you know, and that was one of the great changes that took place that really separated old Florida from the new modern Florida was this importance on conservation, this trying to marry conservation and commerce to get it to work. And to, you know, to sort of let developers develop, but at the same time, you know, not to really destroy a lot of these wonderful natural elements that are a huge part of what Florida is all about. And, you know, when Walt started buying up the properties in the late 50s, early 60s, you really didn't have this explosion of environmentalism really until about a year or two before the opening of Disney. So, you know, you kind of have the state government who is sort of on the hook for this deal that is very much an old Florida mindset of very pro commerce. And now they're living in a world where, you know, hey, it's Florida, we're about business, but now you got to take conservation into account. So it was a very difficult navigating for the state government, specifically when you dealt with all of these local jurisdictions who were really not happy about the fact that they didn't have a say in Disney buying up so much to begin with, and now they have fireworks every night outside their house when kids are trying to go to sleep. You know, when people are, you know, got to wake up in 5 or 6 hours to go to work.
To your point, Robert, LBJ in 1964 blows up the locks on the Cross Florida Barge Canal. There's universal support for the project in the state of Florida. It's not that controversial. By the time 1970 rolls around, the thing is killed. And there's a bipartisan consensus led partly by your friend, the late Jim Williams, from Ocala. Let's stop this thing. And Nixon himself kills it, right? Askew and Nixon agreed on it. Let's not build this thing. So that's how quickly the environmental consciousness moved in Florida from 64 to 70. That's the same period from 65 to 71 where Walt Disney World's being built. So, In defense of Disney, I think people have to understand the time was very different. The environmental consciousness was completely different in 64 and 65 than it was in 70 and 70.
And when you, I mean, people forget this, but there were, you know, we're talking about the early 70s where, you know, there were portions of Lake Erie that were on fire due to pollution.
Yes.
So, you know, so when Mike Wallace comes to town and he talks to locals about how local waterways are getting polluted, that is going to tap into the national zeitgeist in a big way. And that is not something that you want to be confronted with if you are Disney.
And Disney, to their credit, today and probably from the early 1990s on took water quality very seriously, took being a steward of the land that their property sat on very seriously, to the point where they've done a better job of environmental protection than the state on their lands. They have done a better job of safeguarding the headwaters of the Everglades, which actually run through visiting property in Central Florida. Shingle Creek kind of abuts the Disney property. Reddy Creek obviously runs, and Bonnet Creek run into Disney property. They've done a better job of taking care of those places than the state has with similar waterways that feed the Everglades ecosystem. So Disney has become a good partner. But in 1971, they weren't aware of these issues or weren't prepared to be a good steward. So have to give the Walt Disney Company some credit for corporate responsibility. It took them a while, but they got there. And at this point, they're probably better than the government of the state of Florida. And actually, we'll close on this note. There is a place I like called the Disney Wilderness, which is administered by the Nature Conservancy, but was a land purchased by Disney, given to the Nature Conservancy, which does protect the headwaters of the Everglades. And it's definitely worth checking out if you're in the Poinciana area of Osceola County or the area that borders that in Polk County. Some of this area goes into Polk County. Anyway, next week, we're going to talk about the long and difficult road to getting Epcot Center built in the Disney complex.